Welcome to StrangeNotions.com for our next video interview. Today I'm talking with Dr. Stephen Bullivant. Dr. Stephen is one of our regular contributors here at Strange Notions. He's a senior lecturer in theology and ethics at St. Mary's University in England. Stephen is a former atheist. He studied theology and philosophy at Oxford University, but later converted to Catholicism while completing his doctoral research on the Second Vatican Council and the salvation of unbelievers, a poignant topic for us here at Strange Notions. Stephen has authored two books. The first one is an edited version of his dissertation titled The Salvation of Atheists and Catholic Dogmatic Theology. And the second one, which just came out, is titled Faith and Unbelief. It was published by Canterbury Press in England and Paulus Press in the United States. Stephen's also the co-editor with the philosopher Michael Ruse of the Oxford Handbook of Atheism, which is a massive tome containing essays from many respected atheists and theologians from around the world. So before we dive in, Stephen, I wanted to welcome you. Thank you for all your great contributions to Strange Notions, and thank you for doing this interview.
Well, it's a real pleasure, Brendan. I was delighted to hear about Strange Notions, and it's been a real honor to be part of it.
I think one of the first questions people have when they meet you and learn about your story is, how did an atheist become involved and interested in researching the Catholic Church's teaching on the salvation of unbelievers?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think by accident would be the short answer to that. The slightly longer answer would be that I went to university to study archaeology and ancient history, and kind of a few weeks in, I wasn't enjoying it as I thought I would, and wanted to do philosophy instead. And at Oxford, you can't do philosophy on its own. You have to do it with maths or physics. So basically, the only thing I was kind of qualified to do philosophy with was theology. And, you know, with an ancient history background, I thought that, you know, New Testament and early church had fit in quite well with that. And so I thought that, well, all right, you know, I'll do the minimum theology, the maximum philosophy, and I'll go off and be a philosopher. But, you know, it never quite worked out like that. It was always the theology and particularly the Catholic theologians that interested me. So when it came to pick a topic to do a master's on, I happened to be, you know, that week, I happened to be reading about Vatican II and the salvation of atheists. And that became the master's, became the doctorate, which became one book, and it's now become the second book. And I guess, you know, along that process, you know, halfway through the doctorate, I was baptized and received into the Catholic Church in Rome in 2008, which I think is the same year that you were. But, you know, that's a whole other interview and probably a whole other book.
Now, in the book, Faith and Unbelief, you wonder what part that Christians play in the rise of atheism. So can you comment maybe on the role of Christian thought or actions on this rising tide of unbelief?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's one of the leading themes of the book as a whole, I guess. The idea that widespread atheism, secularity, non-religion are by and large features of either Christian or by now kind of formerly Christian countries. You know, I'm sitting here in Europe, which, you know, was for what, the best part of 2,000 years, the heart of Christendom. And, you know, in this corner of it, at least, about 50% of the population would say they've got no religion. And about a good third of even those brought up as Catholics would say they have no religion. And, you know, look, America, you know, it's a far, far more religious place than, you know, it might seem sometimes when you're there. But, you know, even there, it's what, 20% and rising, people say they have no religion. So, you know, this has happened on Christianity's watch. And if that doesn't make Christians kind of take a very long, hard look in the mirror, then I think there's something wrong with them, frankly. And there's kind of two broad ways you can kind of try and answer that question. One is to look at kind of big historical cultural shifts, if you like. And, you know, historians, believers and non-believers alike might point to the Reformation or the Enlightenment as kind of sowing the seeds that are, you know, coming to fruition in the 20th and 21st centuries. The other kind of angle is to look at the kind of the smaller individual stories. And, you know, the Vatican II has a good line on this one. It says that believers can have more than a little to do with the rise of atheism by neglecting their moral and social lives, by kind of neglecting their education in the faith, by preaching false doctrine. And the basic idea there is that, look, if all Christians were, you know, like the kind of people you talk about in your new book, Saints and Social Justice, then atheism would be a pretty hard sell. But they're not. And, you know, that's as much a self-accusation as it is anything else. So I guess the idea is that, you know, it's not that, you know, if there were better Christians, there'd be no atheism. I mean, that's quite a very dismissive look at the kind of seriousness of atheism and the reasons for it. But nevertheless, I mean, I think kind of the failure to be teachers and witnesses has to be a contributing factor.
Now, the Catholic position on the salvation of atheists is a subtle one, and it's one you're deeply concerned with. I mentioned earlier that you did your doctoral research on this very question. And so what does the Catholic Church teach about the possibility of salvation for non-believers?
Yeah, I mean, I think subtle is the word for it. I want to talk in a couple of future posts on Strange Notions about precisely this subject, but kind of here are some of the bullet points. I mean, the first thing to kind of recognize is that Vatican II's dogmatic constitution of the Church, Lumen Gentium, is quite clear that the kind of, if you like, criteria for salvation are faith, baptism, and the Church, and that anyone who's saved is only saved with those three things, and anyone who doesn't have all of those three things can't be saved. Okay. A few paragraphs later, though, it starts talking about those who have not yet accepted the gospel, but who are related to the people of God, which is the Church in various ways. And it talks about Jews and Muslims and followers of other religions. And then it gives this sentence. It's quite a dense sentence, but it's an important one. Nor does divine providence deny the assistances necessary for salvation to those who, without fault, have not yet arrived at an express recognition of God, and who, not without divine grace, endeavour to attain to an upright life. Now, look, that's a sentence that you know, I'd want to attach, and in, you know, a previous book have kind of a big theological riders to pretty much every word in there. But the kind of the take-home point is that the council's saying that certain atheists are able to be saved. Now, it's not saying all atheists, it's not saying any atheists, it's not, on the other hand, saying only one or two if they're lucky kind of thing. It's just talking purely about possibility. Okay, it's not playing a numbers game, it's not talking about probability, it's just saying, look, it's possible. Now, if you put those two things together, Lumen Gentium, the Catholic Church, teaches that faith, baptism, and the Church are necessary for salvation, and it's possible for atheists to be saved. Now, if that's the case, then there must be some way that an atheist can kind of fulfill the criteria of faith, baptism, and the mediation of the Church. Now, look, that looks like a pretty tall order looked at in kind of abstract terms like that. But actually, and this is one of the things I talk about in the book, a lot of the kind of the theological heavy lifting on most of those issues has already been done kind of, you know, in the first few centuries of the Church, because the Church has always taught that a lot of, you know, a great many people who lived before Jesus were not only saved, but are kind of actual saints. So, you know, the Abraham and Moses, but also Gentiles in the Old Testament, like the Queen of Sheba. You know, Jesus says she's going to be one of the judges at the last day. And, you know, even, you know, some of the early theologians were quite happy with the idea that, you know, some of the Greek philosophers would be there in heaven. You know, Justin Martyr's clearly looking forward to hanging out with Socrates when he gets to heaven. Now, if Socrates or the Queen of Sheba are saved, then they've had to fulfill the same criteria of faith, baptism, and the Church. So a lot of the kind of theological heavy listing. It's my little daughters who should be in bed. Come to say hello. You going to say hello, Grace?
Hello.
Yeah, so a lot of the theological heavy lifting has already been done in the church, and yeah, I think subtle is the word for it. And you know, there's a lot of speculative stuff to be said on all of these topics, but the church is clear that they can be saved, but it doesn't really go into the details. That's why I've got a job.
Now, one of the most interesting parts of your newest book, Faith and Unbelief, is the conclusion, where you examine what both Christians and atheists can learn from each other. And so, can you explain a little bit, what can Christians learn from atheists, and what can atheists learn from Christians?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know this from Strange Notions. I think probably anyone watching this will know that one of the big complaints that both sides have is that, you know, the other side is misrepresenting them, attacking straw men, you know, constructing kind of false views of what they're claiming that you know, we think, okay? And I mean, I think, you know, it's very often a complaint that's fully justified. I mean, I'll give two examples. I mean, it's so common even, you know, writing the very serious atheist philosophers to see faith talked about as though it means a kind of, you know, last resort belief against all logic and against all evidence. That only kind of people who want to commit intellectual suicide take. And look, at least in the Catholic tradition, this just isn't what the word faith means. It's not how Augustine meant it. It's not how Thomas Aquinas means it. It's not what the Catechism of the Catholic Church means by it. And from the other side, it's so common. And I mean, this happens on Strange Notions to see Christians saying that atheists are moral relativists and have to be moral relativists. And look, I wasn't a moral relativist when I was an atheist. And I'm pretty sure from reading the Combox that the vast majority of atheists on at least Strange Notions aren't moral relativists. And so I think, you know, the first thing that dialogue helps us to do is to really properly understand the other without caricature. But the other thing it helps us to do is it kind of helps us to learn more about ourselves. I mean, you know, if someone reads this book and, you know, goes on Amazon and writes a one-star review saying that Bullivan is an arrogant, pretentious, verbose, immoral champion of irrationality whose jokes aren't funny, then, you know, okay, I think that's not true. You know, I think my jokes are pretty hilarious, frankly. But it's going to pain me to read that kind of feedback, but it's probably good for me to know that's the impression I can give to people. And, you know, if, you know, Christians are always complaining about, you know, atheists kind of, you know, misrepresenting them. And, you know, Henri de Lubac, what, 80 years ago, talks about how, look, if these kinds of misunderstandings are common, then, you know, it's possibly because we've not been, you know, preaching what we actually do believe properly. So I think that's the other thing they can learn. You know, we can learn about each other, but we can also learn about ourselves.
Excellent. Well, thanks again for joining us. And I encourage everybody to check out Stephen's three books, the two that he's written himself, The Salvation of Atheists and Catholic Dogmatic Theology, published by Oxford University Press. And then more recently, Faith and Unbelief, published in America by Paulus Press. And then finally, the book he co-edited with philosopher Michael Ruse titled The Oxford Handbook of Atheism, again published by Oxford University Press. So, Stephen, thanks for joining us. Where can people go to find out more about your work and your research online?
Well, Google me, but if you can't find the answers, just send me an email, stephen.bullivan@smuc.ac.uk. You know, I don't get much mail, fan or otherwise, so it's always nice to hear from people.
Excellent. And for more interviews, articles, and great discussion, be sure to visit our site, strangenotions.com. Thanks for tuning in.